This hour of the Jason Rancho is brought to you by You Build It. Lots of news is happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? Let's get political.
It's the last full week for the Trump and Biden teams to make their cases. And the focus, of course, is on the battleground states. The ones that are believed to be too close to call. We're talking about North Carolina and Pennsylvania. We're talking about Wisconsin and Florida. But really, it's going to come down to convincing 4%, 5% of the state voting base that you're the right person for the job. You've got Joe Biden who makes mistake after mistake after mistake. Although in a case of something that happened today, I guess it wasn't a mistake.
My name's Joe Biden. I'm Jill Biden's husband, and I am Kamala's running mate. You all think I'm kidding, don't you?
No, we don't. And I guess that was the point. But you do understand that a key talking point from the right is that it's Kamala Harris who's going to be in charge, and she is the most liberal senator right now. She is voted furthest to the left of any other senator. So, Joe Biden, when you try to distance yourself from the far fringe to the left wing of the Democratic Party, because it's your administration, not Bernie Sanders, not AOC's, you're running. I don't know if it's smart to put Kamala Harris up there and say she is actually going to be the president and you're the vice president, especially at the same time as you're telling us about how there's no issues with your mental fitness. In a lot of ways, this election would be easier if not for certain elements within the media that are creating division where none needs to be. I have a story out for American Consequences at AmericanConsequences.com. Where I talk about the 60 Minutes fiasco, where 60 Minutes intentionally tried to make drama out of a moment they caused. The moment being President Trump, 45 minutes into an interview, deciding after a producer got involved that he was going to call it the day. He didn't want to do any more of the interview. Because Leslie Stahl was incredibly rude and combative. And angry and mean throughout the entire thing, and he was done. And so 60 Minutes wanted you to think that he left simply because she asked tough questions. Except when you look at what they aired and the way they aired it and edited versus the raw feed that President Trump put out, you can see that they were doing some things that don't seem all that ethical. And the Trump campaign and the president himself has always gone after the media, saying it's fake news, saying they are treating him unfairly. I think he has a point to them treating him unfairly. And he says the reason why we're so divided in this country is the media.
It's a shame. You know, if we had an honest media, this country would come together so fast. It's true. We have... not all of them, but they're some of the most corrupt people on earth. They are so, and you see it. You see it with the Biden corruption. They don't even want it. They won't cover it. They won't talk about it.
Fox News talks about it. Tucker Carlson Tonight is talking about it. But he's right. Generally speaking, the media didn't want to touch the Hunter Biden issue unless it's to claim without any evidence whatsoever. In fact, evidence to the contrary. They say, oh, this is Russian disinformation. Because everything is Russian disinformation. But you can't just run against the media. The president knows that. He is running against Joe Biden.
This election is a choice between a Trump super recovery or a Biden depression. You're going to have a depression. Your 401ks down the tubes. Look how great our stock market. I had a little blip yesterday because Nancy Pelosi will not approve stimulus. That's all. But it's a choice between a Trump boom or a Biden lockdown.
And the president is smart to make this about the economy because right now, as was the case last month, and last year and the year before that and in 2016 when he was running, he polls well on the economy. No matter what, he polls well. People trust him more than they trust Joe Biden on the topic of the economy. And so to that end, Trump has been really hammering home a very simple message.
If he gets in, he's going to raise your taxes at a level that nobody's ever seen. He is the first candidate I've ever seen who is running on a promise that I will raise your taxes. I've never heard that one.
It is very weird, except the difference is, I suppose, Joe Biden wants you to believe that he's only going to raise taxes on people making over $400,000 a year. However, when you look at the nonpartisan organizations that have looked at the former vice president's plan, its spending plan, there's no way they can raise the amount of money they need off of just taxing over $400,000 recipients. It's just not possible, at least not at the rate that they're proposing, that I believe is at 37.9, something like that. They can't raise that money. And so they're either going to cut spending or they are going to create more tax hikes for other salary demographics. What's most likely? What's most likely? They cut spending? And remember, we're talking about Democrats. They're going to cut spending or they're just going to tax other people. What has history told us? In almost every single instance in which a Democrat had to choose between cutting spending and raising taxes. We're going through it right now in Washington State where they're going to raise taxes. Jay Inslee is going to raise taxes if you keep him in office and you keep control of the House and the Senate in the hands of the Democrats. They will raise taxes. They always do. This is about the economy. In Pennsylvania, it's not just about the economy, it's also about the environment. It's where there is that intersection of environmentalism and the economy intersect. Pennsylvania right now is a significant issue for Joe Biden. If Donald Trump wins in Pennsylvania, he just needs to pick up Florida, and then it means almost certainly that he becomes a second-term president. Joe Biden needs Pennsylvania. And that's why President Trump is hammering home the huge vulnerability for Joe Biden in Pennsylvania. Biden wants to end fracking.
No, he's going to ban fracking because he has no choice. His party wants to ban it. He's going to ban fracking and deliver an economic death sentence for Pennsylvania and for many other places in our country. And frankly, it affects not just places that frack and oil territory. You know who it affects? Everybody having to do with paying an energy bill.
He's right. And this is a talking point that's connecting with voters. I think I made this point yesterday of, if MSNBC and CNN had a whole bunch of voters in Pennsylvania who are all like, yeah, no one thinks he wants to ban fracking. We support Joe. We're with Joe. They would air those clips. They would air the one clip they find on an endless loop. But they're not doing that. Because they're not finding voices who are taking that position. Emmanuel, for example, is a senior project manager over at a contracting company. It's based out of Pennsylvania. And the best that CNN could do was find someone who was unsure about what Joe Biden actually thinks on fracking.
President Trump has a more clear perspective on keeping fracking going with minimal regulations, where Biden in the past and through the campaign has kind of gone back and forth on what he wants to do.
Fracking is incredibly important for the Pennsylvanian economy. Very, very, very important. Lots of jobs are tied to it. And when you've got a lot of jobs tied to one particular industry, it ends up impacting others. For example, if you're Charlo, who owns a bar, you're counting on those people to be employed. So after a hard day's work in the fracking industry, you're going down to his bar and you're ordering a drink. Not a Michelob Ultra, though, because that's gross. Right? Kind of disgusting.
They're not the worst.
But like a Pilsner, a nice IPA.
Yeah, IPAs are pretty good.
Charlo knows the importance of that.
It's almost like a domino effect, and it could just be disastrous in my eyes if you know, first a pandemic and then fracking is banned.
That's going to do in a lot of businesses, not just in Pennsylvania, but across the country. This is hurting Joe Biden, and he is getting increasingly desperate here. And you can sort of tell some of the coverage on CNN and MSNBC is shifting in tone. They really went from very, very confident to shaky. They should be shaky. You can look at the polls all you want. What did the polls say in 2016? It was a guarantee that Hillary Clinton was going to win. It was guaranteed that Donald Trump would lose. Here we are 4 years later. Donald Trump is running for a second term. You're listening to The Jason Rancho. When we come back, we're going to dive into the latest out of the coronavirus world. We are just 124 followers away from 60,000 on Twitter. Could you help me get to 60,000? Which, I don't know if you know this. Not only 60,000, not only is that my favorite number ever, it was also my jersey number when I played Little League in Los Angeles.
They let you put that on a jersey?
What do you mean, let me?
I mean,
one of the numbers. They said, which numbers do you want? And I was like, someone had 7, another one had 13, and then there was one with 60,000. I was like, I want that one.
Did it have the comma and three zeros, or was it 60K?
No, it was 60,000. It's a comma and then three zeros.
Wow, that's impressive.
Yeah.
Was it a smaller font?
Yeah.
Okay. Makes sense.
It was a smaller font. But that was my jersey. It would be an honor to relive my youth as a star baseball player. If you would give me a follow on Twitter, you can go to Twitter and just search Jason Rants and give me a like, or text the keyword Twitter to 1-800-465-8770. Text the keyword Twitter to 1-800-465-8770, or just search Jason Rants. I need 124 followers by the end of the night so I can hit 60,000. And I mean, I was going to say be the highest followed person in this building. I'm already there, so I can extend my lead.
You're the highest followed person in this building?
Yep.
Wow. I learned something today.
Did you learn that I'm vain? Because I look at these things almost all the time.
I know you're vain. Okay. I can't believe I doubted you the first time.
Just throwing that out there. Follow me on Twitter. Twitter.com/JasonRants. Find out what else is trending.
What's trending? The coronavirus.
So the governor announced today that Washington State has decided to join a pact with other Western states to review the safety and efficacy of whatever vaccine ends up being developed first, once it actually gets approved by the FDA. Now, Jay Inslee says a multi-state panel will review all of the information released by the federal government.
This panel will review all publicly available data concurrently with federal reviews and will present a report as soon as possible after the FDA approves a vaccine.
Is this necessary? No. Is it political? Yes. Does this further erode confidence in the vaccine? Yes. Jay Inslee is pretending that the federal government, the FDA, can't test the safety and efficacy of a vaccine. However, this coming from the governor of a state that couldn't figure out how to acquire cloth masks alone. Complain, we got to compete against other states. Governor Inslee had no idea that radicals had taken over a 6-block radius of the state's most populous city. Jay Inslee had his administration, due to incompetence, give hundreds of millions of dollars coming from the unemployment coffers to Nigerian scam artists. But we're supposed to believe that Jay Inslee can help oversee a vaccine safety topic. Okay, sure. Inslee, who wants to pretend that he's a hero, just like all of these other governors, all Democrats, they're heroes. They know more than the FDA.
When a safe vaccine is available, our state is going to be ready to distribute it in a way that is as equitable and efficient and safely as humanly possible.
Equitable? When someone like Jay Inslee says that, it takes on a slightly different meaning. That becomes then a social justice issue. It sounds like code for giving it to people based on ethnicity or gender or sexuality or religion. Is that what he means? And of course, he ends up during this press conference earlier today picking up on the Joe Biden talking point, a literal talking point that he's just taking from a recent speech that was given by Joe Biden, saying the White House just kind of gave up. White flag.
We've had some distressing news out of the White House recently. The fact is that the White House is essentially almost checked out of this fight now. The White House chief of staff said that they're not going to control this virus.
That's actually not what he said. Context seems to be important, not to politicians, but context is important. It is correct that we cannot control the virus. We can mitigate, but you can't control a virus. If we can control a virus, Jay Inslee, would you have just been the governor of a state that closed down the economy for as long as it was closed down? We literally just got the news from the Peninsula School District that they're closing their schools again because we have not taken control of the virus. So is the president in charge now of controlling the virus from spreading? Do you have any responsibility? I imagine someone like Jay Inslee will sit back and say, look, we can't control the virus. We need to just mitigate its effects until we get a vaccine that we're not going to put out there until we see it and give it a sign off. Imagine that for a moment. You have over 220,000 people dead in this country from the coronavirus. A vaccine has been created in record time. It goes through the process. The FDA does all of their rigorous checking and says this is safe. And let's say you're someone who is in their 60s, or you've got a parent or grandparent who's in that age range. The ones who are, in fact, at most risk, a higher risk of negative health consequences associated with COVID. The FDA comes out and says, this is ready. And then Jay Inslee says, whoa, slow your roll. We're going to look at the paperwork. We'll let you know if it's ready in about a month or two. Does that seem fair? Does that seem equitable? Does that seem like he's making a decision that's in your interest? Or perhaps he's coming out and announcing a decision that's inherently political? It is inherently political. And on the Biden-Harris campaign, or excuse me, the Harris-Biden campaign, because he's not joking, Kamala Harris is taking all the fear-mongering one step forward.
Donald Trump gets on the debate stage and makes fun of Joe Biden for wearing a mask. When experts, when Dr. Fauci has said we can save lives, it is predicted if we don't take this seriously, 500,000 people in our country will have died by March of next year. In five
by
months,
March?
Whoopi.
Oh my God.
It's got to stop. We need leaders. We need to be honest. We need to do what we would do with our children, what we would do with our neighbor. Love thy neighbor and
I
be responsible.
Like
this is a contagious virus that kills people. And I think the American people deserve so much better from their leaders.
Okay. I like how they keep upping the death count by pushing it further down the road. Because it went from another 200,000 by December. Now it's up to 500,000 because they've extended it out to March without, by the way, remembering that we were told by now we would have 2.2 or 2.3 million people dead in this country because of the incompetence from the White House. We're not at 2.3 million, are we? Thankfully, we're not. Because despite what the Harris-Biden campaign will tell you, the president didn't just sit back and do nothing. If he did, we carried a lot of press briefings over several months of him not doing nothing when I could have been doing my radio show. Although I will say that was a good little bit of a break.
It was a good breather.
Was, you know, you just got to reset every once in a while and play a press briefing.
Does Trump get to throw radio host on his resume now that, you know, we carried him so much?
I mean, probably he would qualify as a podcaster.
AM 770 KTTH
yeah.
Show host?
Yeah, I'll fine. Put it on our bio on the Twitter page. Speaking of Twitter, you can follow me on Twitter. Twitter.com/JasonRants. We're very close to hitting 60,000 followers. Wouldn't you like to be a part of that history? The history being an increase in my ego that no one thought was possible. It would be a historically high ego boost for me.
There's more ego to gain?
I know! I thought the same thing.
I am
apparently
so
there
screwed.
Is. can also send me a text, 1-800-465-8770. To the Jason Rand Show live on this Tuesday afternoon. Thank you so much for tuning in. Really do appreciate it. The city of Seattle has decided to essentially cede all of its parks to the homeless. Literally all of them. Good luck finding a safe park for you or your kids. Good luck finding a park that has not been completely overtaken with tents. And if you think I'm exaggerating, I defy you. I defy you to walk around park to park in Seattle. Tell me what you find. Don't do it at night. Because it's not safe. You tell me which park is not overcome with homelessness, okay? And we'll do a breaking news segment. Because that would be breaking news. You found that one park. Just don't go looking at night.
I mean, there's crap everywhere. It's dangerous. It's not a safe environment. Your kids used to play here, and dogs used to hang out in the park. I used to lie here in suntan and read a book. You can't do that anymore. So it's sad.
It is sad. You have open air drug dealing going on, and of course the drug use that goes with it. You've got muggings happening. You've got human waste in these parks. You've got attacks on police officers in these parks. And yeah, you had that murder on Capitol Hill at Cal Anderson Park, a murder suicide. People in the city are alarmed. Gabby, who lives in Ballard, is alarmed. She told Q13 the city needs to step up.
I feel bad because these are people also, but somebody needs to do something about it.
They're not going to. I mean, the city is not going to do anything. Not yet. I guess they haven't felt the political pressure yet. So now a coalition of community groups got together. They're lobbying the city to do literally anything to help. In this letter, it says our parks and public spaces have become dangerous and chaotic, exactly the opposite of what people need at this moment. And acres of park space have been closed to the public because they have been closed by the city, vandalized, or are inaccessible for use to the residents of Seattle. In Seattle, just a few years ago, there was another tax that was passed that was supposed to go towards parks. We put millions and millions and millions of dollars into these parks because I'm told the city of Seattle and its residents really care about their green space. You could have fooled me. Almost every single day, I've been posting to my Twitter feed almost at 60,000. Number one in the building, by the way. At twitter.com/JasonRants. I've been posting photos of homelessness in Seattle. And I've been focusing a lot on parks. And the response that I've been getting is sheer alarm, dismay, and disbelief. They look at this and they don't see a city that cares about its parks, let alone its environment. People care. Tim Gatos, for example, he cares. He's the founder of Friends of Denny Park. He was on the show a week and a half ago. He told Q13 that the city just opened the parks after closing them, but for what? You can't use them.
A couple weeks ago, parks put up signs to say playgrounds are no open, right? Because they had been closed this whole time during COVID since March. And then they put up signs saying now they're open. And they did that here, but they're completely unusable because we have dozens of needles in the playground at the bottom of slides.
I've seen the photos. He's not exaggerating. You see dozens of these needles at the playgrounds in these parks. We have a homeless situation that's gotten worse in the last several months. You can go ahead like the city does and blame the pandemic all you want. We've seen this trend for years.
It's become a public safety hazard for both the folks in the park as well as the neighbors. And now with the situation with the navigation team being dismantled, and really there's really no tools in the toolbox to really help create a safe atmosphere here.
It's not safe. Oh, but see, they didn't They didn't just get rid of the navigation team and move along. They've replaced it. Navigation team was a team of police officers and community activists, outreach activists, advocates, social workers. They'd go into each of these encampments. They would sweep them and in the process guarantee that anyone who wants to get shelter will get shelter. They will not sweep a single encampment unless there is a bed to put them in. The council thought that that was somehow inhumane. Less inhumane is keeping people out on the streets sleeping in filth. That, I guess, is less inhumane. And so they get rid of the navigation team and they create a new team that they're spending $2 million on this year. It's October 27th. How many people do you think are on this team for $2 million? An eight-person outreach and response team. No police officers. Eight people. $2 million down the drain. This group has no enforcement authority whatsoever. None. Police had enforcement. They didn't get to use it all that often, but they had enforcement powers. In this case, you're going to get people who are going out on the streets, doing the work that they've been doing for decades, asking people if they're ready to go into a shelter, trying to make relationships, and then hopefully building upon them to a point where they're trusted and listened to. That takes years. We know it takes years because the very people who are going to be doing it have been doing it already for years and have not gotten the results. We have an emergency. We have an emergency right now. And it's getting worse, and it's not going to end, because we don't have any leadership. We have ideologues. This is what happens when you put ideologues in charge, and it doesn't matter whether the ideologue is Republican or Democrat. When you have an ideologue in charge, or in this case in Seattle, ideologues in charge, they have blinders on. They don't see what's happening. Because they're so married to their ideology. They're so married to their political beliefs. They have convinced themselves, regardless of what the data suggests, they have convinced themselves that their policies are just, that their policies will work. And so they are not paying attention to the aftermath of implementing those policies. The aftermath of not sweeping up these encampments and putting people in shelters is on full display right now in Seattle, and it's spreading. Full display. There are others, particularly on the Seattle City Council, that don't care about the short-term problems because they convince themselves that the long-term is going to see significant growth, significant progress, significant changes, and it's going to make it more justified to have the short-term issues. Yes, people are going to sleep out on the streets for an extra month, but the good news is after that month, they're going to be in a home forever. They believe that. They've convinced themselves of that. They have no reason to believe that. They have no data to back up that belief, but they're ideologues. There is clearly a place for an adherence to a political belief. Right? Because generally it's going to serve you well, or you believe generally it'll serve you well. As a general belief, I want less government intervention in my everyday life. As a general belief, I want lower taxes, not higher taxes. Every once in a while, you can make a case that there should be more regulation of something or a higher tax. You can make that case. I'm not going to say no every single time. I'm open-minded enough to understand that my ideological view may not always be right, because when we talk about ideology, it's really talked about in the abstract. In the real world, things happen that we don't foresee, like a pandemic. Things happen. But an ideologue is stubborn in their adherence to that ideology. An ideologue is unmoved. They are unmovable. They are Shama Sawant. They are Teresa Mosqueda. They are Dan Strauss and Lisa Herbold. They are the city council. And we're getting the results that we deserve because we put in a council yet again that's full of ideologues. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to join the conversation and send me a text. When we come back, we're going to talk with the owner of Pilgrim Coffee, a wonderful coffee shop. They actually sent me coffee a while ago, and I forgot. And I drank it, and it was amazing, and I forgot that they sent it to me. I thought I bought it, so I bought more and more and more. That's always a good sign. Justin Shaheen, the owner, has decided that he's going to open a shop during a pandemic. Why? Why would you do that? We're going to talk to him when we come back. The Jason Rancho on AM 770 KTTH, streaming on all those smart speakers like Amazon Echo and Google Home. While a whole bunch of businesses are closing due to the coronavirus and the poor handling of the economy, one entrepreneur is actually opening a business. Pilgrim Coffee started as a coffee truck, and now they're opening their first coffee house in the city of Seattle. And they're asking the community for some help pitching in to support this business. The owner is Justin Shaheen, and he joins me now. Justin, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
So the big question, of course, given the timing, why open a business during a pandemic?
Well, we are hopeful that things are going to get better, starting out with that. We set up our coffee truck in our neighborhood during the pandemic, and we were overwhelmed with the neighborhood response to having kind of an open atmosphere for our guests to come up and grab a cup of coffee off our truck. And we just really believe that our neighborhood is really needing a coffee shop, and so we're willing to go all in on it.
And you, in a way, have created a new neighborhood, at least a new name for the neighborhood.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't take the credit for that, but there is an organization called For Nora that's in our neighborhood. It's a business network, and we are one of a few businesses who have kind of adopted that organization, and we started calling our neighborhood, that is North Aurora, we started calling it Nora, as a way to kind of reclaim and rename our neighborhood, which kind of consists of Bitter Lake, Licton Springs, Greenwood, and Holler Lake. There's kind of that convergence zone at 105th and Aurora, and we really just want to redefine that neighborhood.
So what makes you different from a Starbucks or any, you know, run-of-the-mill coffee shop?
Well, I mean, as far as serving coffee, we're not that much different. However, our focus is on this neighborhood, and we're committed to being here. I live just down the road from where our shop's going to be, and it's kind of a dream to be able to live in a large city and to serve and work right in the same radius in which I do everything else. Mm-hmm. And so it's me investing in my own neighborhood and hoping that other businesses will see that this neighborhood is worth investing in as well.
And there certainly has been issues in at least parts of this area as far as businesses putting money into it and really even the community stepping up and helping it. I mean, you know, there are parts of Aurora, for example, that are not doing so well.
Absolutely.
How does this play into revitalizing it? Do you think it's going to create some momentum?
That's our hope. Our team just really believes that it just takes a business to commit and to show others that this is worth, this area, this neighborhood is worth fighting for.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen kind of this, city has kind of redefined this area as an urban village, but we're not really seeing the results of that yet. And so we believe that it's coming. You know, we're right across from the newly opened or soon to be opened light rail station up at Northgate. And there's going to be a walking bridge that's going to take people from our neighborhood over to that. And so we're connecting this area. It's happening, but we believe that, businesses need to invest now while the time is right.
Just joining me, I'm talking with Justin Shaheen. He's the owner of Pilgrim Coffee. If you want to help support this business as they're opening their first coffee shop, moving away from the business model of having a coffee truck, pilgrimcoffeehouse.com, pilgrimcoffeehouse.com. You know, the one thing that you didn't point out in how you differentiate yourself is you actually have really good coffee. I've had your coffee. It is very, very good.
Well, Jason, you know, I'm trying to be humble. Like,
don't be humble. I'm the only one who's humble here. I am attractive. I am smart. I am witty and incredibly humble. That's it. I'm the only one who gets to do that.
Oh, my apologies, Jason.
So you have really good coffee, and you know, part of that is, you know, you're doing the roasting yourself. You're doing it the right way.
Yeah, thank you so much. Yeah, if people would like to go to our website, pilgrimcoffeehouse.com, click on the banner at the top. It's got a link to our pitch-in campaign, as well as follow us at pilgrim_coffeetruck on Instagram.
Yeah. So I do want to jump into the local political decisions here, because obviously we've been covering a lot of the businesses that have decided to close down or move out of Seattle. As a listener to the show, I know that you're aware politically of where I view the direction of the city. I mean, do you view Seattle as business friendly?
You know, it's hard to say. I think I have my own personal opinions about these things, but as a business, I just want to open a business in my neighborhood and care for my neighbors.
I know, but has it been difficult for you to actually be able to do that in not just an easier way of, you know, jumping through some of the bureaucratic hoops that we expect of any city, but doing so in a way, sure, where you feel supported and where it's actually affordable?
Yeah, it's expensive for sure. And, you know, I would probably personally make some changes to how things are done. But again, it's not my position, and I know this is a political show, and I don't want to
totally
put myself in a place where I'm speaking on behalf of the community that supports us.
Totally, and this is just you talking. I mean, I am kind of curious, just since you are going through this for the first time, at least with a brick and mortar location, what would be something that you would change?
I think making it easier. Probably just general sales tax, labor tax, things like that, that could just help alleviate and give us some breathing room to grow the business a little bit stronger. We want to pay our employees well. We are planning to do so. We're planning to create a benefit package that is better than what's expected and even required by our city. But to have the breathing room on our own to be able to do that would be...
Well, obviously, we want you to do the best that you can. Pilgrimcoffeehouse.com if you want to learn more about this business, but of course also to contribute to some crowdsourcing that they're doing just to make it a little bit easier for them. We want to support local businesses, whether it's in Seattle or Enumclaw, Bellingham, or Bellevue. So I hope that people check you guys out. Pilgrimcoffeehouse.com. Justin will serve you coffee regardless of your political positions, but even if you're a socialist, you are expected to pay, correct?
Absolutely.
The community's not going to pick up the bill for that?
No, we are just here for our neighbors.
There you go. Pilgrimcoffeehouse.com. Go there right now. Justin Shaheen, thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Jason.
Absolutely. And seriously, I really do mean it. This coffee is really, really good. And I just realized the first time I tried this coffee, he sent it to us for free because he's a listener. However, afterwards, this is how you know I really liked it. I actually bought some more. PilgrimCoffeeHouse.com. Go there now if you want to support them. PilgrimCoffeeHouse.com. You've been listening to The Jason Rancho. Thank you so much for tuning in.